Bill C-100 offers Ontario law enforcement new powers to squash dissidents. It's very concerning. The Liberal NDP coalition, which they keep telling us is not a coalition, puts forward a new federal budget. It's also concerning. And we've got the firing squad back, looking at news really, really quick. Hi, I'm Michael Thiessen, and that is Matthew Halleck and Andrew DiBartolo, and they're with me for Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. My name is Matthew Halleck, as Mike has said. I'm the host for today's program, and I want to get some housekeeping out of the way before we get into the news. Whether you're watching us on Rumble, which is basically the only way you can see us because YouTube keeps canceling all our videos, at the Liberty Coalition Canada, or listening to us via podcast, please subscribe, share, like, review, and if you can on that platform, leave us a 5-star rating and a comment. It helps us get our content out to more people. Also, be sure to go over to our website, the Liberty CoalitionCanada.com. That's LibertyCoalitionCanada.com, to check out our revamped website over there and to subscribe to our email list. That way you can't get censored from us by big tech. And if you're as sick as mainstream media lies as we are, be sure to go over to that website. Click on the donate tab at the top of the page as well and donate to us. We would love to have your support because that's the only way that we can build up this institution into something that can compete with our nonsense mainstream media and bring you some real good news content from a Christian and conservative perspective. And finally, we're putting out new content all the time, and we've just released a couple videos through the Liberty U, which is a new thing we're hoping to do with Mike, where he walks us through a couple different topics, one, oil and gas production in Canada and how it's central to our economy, and also the bias in the media. But today on the show, we bring back the segment that we introduced a couple weeks ago, the firing squad. And with us, as Mike mentioned, we have Drew Bartolo. So, Mike, over to you for the first story for this week's firing squad.
Well, folks, my first story is pretty simple. I'm looking forward to you guys just having some fun off of this one. Basically, it's our Ontario government recommitting again to following the doctor's orders on mask mandate. So we're looking for over-under picks here. I'm going to go with Ontario is back into full mask mandating as of September 15th. How about you guys?
Drew, over to you. You're the Ontario boy.
Sure. What's funny is we're technically not totally mask-free. That's kind of the myth. You still have to wear a mask if you're on a bus. You have to wear a mask if you go to the hospital. You have to wear it. So there's a lot of places where you still have to wear a mask, long-term care facilities. And so September, maybe, I would probably say around early October. Usually that's when flu season starts to pick up again. And so we'll see a surge in cases into September. And then I think they'll drop the hammer in October, sometime in the first couple weeks. That would be my pick.
And as a Manitoban, we're kind of in the same situation. I suspect that closer to October, November, we tend to trail behind you guys, obviously, because we have a fraction of your population. But I mean, even now, like you say, Andrew, it's so ingrained in our society because of our government. Most places that I go in Manitoba, anyway, people are still wearing masks out in public. So I suspect that the government will be pretty quick to go back to this and that this will be just a new feature common in our everyday lives of Canadian citizens if we don't just stand up and say, nope, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's most concerning about that one for me is just, again, the politicians saying we're going to take the advice of non-elected officials and we're going to mandate law again based upon those non-elected voices rather than debate about it in the House. Now, let's go on to you, Matt. What's your story for the firing squad?
Well, I'm bringing you this interesting comment made by our esteemed Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, where he warned that Canadian social cohesion was threatened and under attack by, and these are his words, excessive populism and over-nationalism, whatever that means. And I think just initial comment on my part, this really shows his hand as a cosmopolitan globalist, right? He places the blame for social division in this idea that there are sovereign nation states, right? That's a part of what came out of the Second World War, is a bunch of liberals push the blame onto the entire structure, the form of government that is national states with their own sovereignty. And that's where supranational groups like the UN, the IMF, the WEF, all these have kind of come in to usurp the role of the nation state and the authority therein. And this is just showing that our prime minister is a member of that global community, whatever that means. And he thinks that being a good Canadian citizen, having Canadian pride, is something that is disruptive to Canada.
I saw someone on Twitter say you hate the trucker convoy without saying trucker convoy. That's basically what he's saying, right? This idea of over-nationalism is code language for waving Canadian flags around because you're proud of your country and the heritage and the foundation of it. So clearly this is I don't like what they did at the trucker convoy because I'm an oversensitive beta and I want to shut it down with actually strong people via the police force. And then anyone who speaks against me, I'll accuse of being an over-nationalist or an excessive populist. It's just a word sandwich attack. That's all it is.
I think the key words in there are not populism and nationalism. The key words are excessive and over. That's the thing that coming off of Matthew's point, you know, back in 2015, he told the New York Times, you know, that he wanted to see a pan-cultural situation. He went on to say there's no core identity, no mainstream in Canada. So he's obviously going with that, with that globalist idea, Matthew, but here, the word excessive and over. So it's okay if you're a populist, which just basically means that the people should have some voice and not just the elites. And it's okay if you like your nation of Canada, but you're just not allowed to do it excessively or over what he thinks it should be, which basically means globalism. So those first two words are as dangerous as the second two words. And ironically, this is just, he's trying to use those bully terms like, oh, you're an overpopulist or you're an excessive populist. Like it's just utter, you know, ridiculous jargon. Okay, Andrew, what do you got?
So my story is like recently breaking. So it's April 21st. It's late morning where I am. And about 2-3 hours ago, the Daily Mail just broke a story, and MSN as well, that the United States will be extending its border restrictions for migrants, so non-US citizens coming through. So basically the breakdown is like this. If you're flying in to the United States, if you're a non-citizen, you need to be fully vaccinated and you also need to provide a negative test. If you're driving across a land crossing, either from Canada or Mexico, you need to be fully vaccinated as a non-citizen or you will be denied entry. And so everyone who thinks that the crazy, heavy-handed totalitarianism that only exists north of the U.S. border needs to remember that this evil worldview, this way of exerting control and pressing down upon people and these very unscientific, illegal ways of operating, apparently our neighbors to the south also quite enjoy that. And so this is a little silly considering where we're going. The U.S. has also, the government has also said that they will actively appeal a recent decision to lift mask mandates on planes. So there were videos of the mask mandates are lifted and then people celebrate, they take their masks off on the plane, and the Biden administration has said, not only are we going to make it so that you have to be vaccinated to come in this country if you're a non-citizen, but they've said they're actively going to fight against this decision to reinstate mask mandates on planes. So basically kind of similar to what's going on here in Canada to what we thought was the very freedom-loving United States. You guys' thoughts on it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently that only applies to those who want to legally cross the border as well. We have to keep in mind that there's a huge border crisis with millions and millions of illegal immigrants flooding the southern border of the United States of America, and they aren't being tested, and yet they're being shipped around the country without being tested, without being, without the government checking whether or not they're vaccinated or not. So I think it's glaringly hypocritical given the state of affairs right now. But it just gets to the point that these type of technocratic controls that our governments are placing on us, whether it's in America or in Canada, are those in power and authority over us, those who are the elites in our society, want this to be par for the course. And that's what we see in bills and regulations like this being passed.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly when you have a Democratic president who is friends with the entire squad, basically those individuals who have promoted no borders at all for the southern border, coming and putting northern restrictions on, or restrictions on both Mexico and Canada, but knowing that the vast majority of it will be applied along the northern border. I think this is more just sort of an agreement between the Trudeau-Biden administrations so that there's, non-vaccinated Canadians aren't fleeing the country. I think that's really what's going on here. I will say this, though. I want to pick a fight with our Italian stallion that's on with us right now. I do want to say a major difference within the U.S. is, of course, that the Biden administration is whining about and appealing, looking to appeal that court ruling. And I had actually heard the opposite. I had heard that they had given up on the appeal, but I know that you read that right off of a news report. They're appealing a decision because the Supreme Court, has made the right ruling, and that is that mask mandating is unconstitutional. So,
just a correction on that. It was a lower court, not the Supreme Court, a lower federal court that did the appeal. But the point still is valid that you're making, Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate you correcting my error and then also validating my correctness. So yeah, all that to say that the U.S. courts seem to be ruling and upholding their constitution, where in Canada, we're seeing the courts just turned right over to the left. And I know that a number of the pastors were following a specific court case in the last number of days where, basically we had a number, the judge throw out our civil liberties as collateral damage for getting through the pandemic. So,
Yeah, just a final comment to tie in everything that we've been talking about. The reason that the states is pushing back harder, is appealing these draconian measures, is because baked into their national DNA is a more limited view of governments, where powers of government authority is delimited across many branches, and that way all government authority is challenged by different spheres of authority within the governmental structure. That's something, federalism is something that the Canadians, that we as Canadians do not enjoy, and we're seeing that lack of national identity as a limited government state has borne rotten fruit for Canadians. So we need more nationalism. We need a better cultural worldview in Canada, not less of one, as our prime minister would suggest.
And we need a worldview that values the individual, where we are now, of course, veering right into that happy area where we are excessive populists and we are over nationalists. So thank you for falling right into Senior Trudeau's trap there, Matt. But that's where we land, because really the opposite is over globalism and excessive elitism, right? Mm-hmm. So let's keep going in that direction. So look, guys, we're going to dig a little bit deeper now into a really important story, and that is Bill C-100. And we talked about it affording exceptional powers to Ontario law enforcement. And I just want to try to contextualize this conversation for a minute. So because the language of the bill has to do with, you know, keeping Ontario open, it's just important to understand that this is not an extension of the Reopening Ontario Act. So in the same way that many of us are anticipating the Ford government to try to somehow extend that act specifically, the Reopening Ontario Act expired on March 28th, 2022. So it's expired. The emergency orders that are within that act don't expire until 30 days after that time frame, which is April 27th. So in 6 days, the Reopening Ontario Act will fully be off of the books. Praise be to the Lord, because it was such, like, not only the worst named act on earth, but some of the most authoritarian, most ridiculous mandates, anti the church, anti honesty, all of these types of things, full of medical coercion, all those types of things. That's off of the books. And I wanted to make that clear. So now we're talking about Bill C-100 keeping Ontario open for business, and it's a different act. Matthew, what did you have to say about this as we get started?
So the intent of the bill, this is the name, Bill 100, Keeping Ontario Open for Business Act 2022. The intent of the bill is apparently to keep Ontario open for business. It is passed by the Solicitor General there in Ontario, and it's for apparently the economic flourishing of Ontarians and to avoid what we saw happen during the trucker convoy, which is the blockade of, you know, infrastructure that is vital to economic activity. So while it's in intention a good thing, the result of the bill is, as we've made mention, giving law enforcement in Ontario extraordinary new powers and making those extraordinary powers ordinary. And that's what we need to highlight, is this bill is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And Andrew, I think people will come to realize how dangerous this bill is when you get into the text of the bill for us.
Well, the first thing I want to do is I just want to be clear about what the real name of the bill is. So the bill, as we've been given, is the Keeping Ontario Open for Business Act. But the real name of the bill is the civil government is my dad, and I can't do all the fun things that he did when he was a rebellious teenager, otherwise I'll get punished for it. So that's the full title of the bill. It was a little too long, so they had to shorten it down, and we'll see as we get into it that that's actually what's going on. So let's look at the actual text of the bill.
My dad, are you actually talking about, do you have Doug Ford in your mind, like Doug Ford, the 18-year-old drug dealer, in your mind?
Right. Yeah. You know? I have. He got to sow his wild oats. Right. He got to do all of his fun, crazy stuff, and he kind of got away with it. But that now that he's a dad, he says to his own kids, "You can't do the things that I did because that's going to be too much trouble for me. That's a hassle. So you're prohibited.
You can't do the things that the nice school council kids did in protesting legally,
right?
Not even to mention all of the stuff that I did while I was sowing my wild oats,
right?
You're really gonna pay for it in this generation.
The stuff I just did a month ago, now you guys can't do it. So again, that was that was too long of a title, so they had to, you know, kind of make it kitschy and shorten it down. So let's look at some of the text of the bill, and we'll see that that's how the original title is the accurate title. So essentially, this bill is to say that any person with a vehicle who in any way, shape, or form impedes access to the ordinary use of protected transportation infrastructure, or directly or indirectly cause such access egress or ordinary use to be impeded if the impediment has or is reasonably expected to have the effect of. So this is basically a fancy way of saying anyone who gets in the way of or who negatively affects by way of access and transportation, as we've defined it, they disrupt the ordinary economic activity or they interfere with the safety, health, or well-being of members of the public. And so they would look at this and say, you know, when you did that protest on the Ambassador Bridge, that was this. You were disrupting the ordinary economic activity of people, or you were interfering with their safety, their health, or their well-being. Anyone who does that, whether it's by way of protest, by again, any kind of interference in these ways, police officers have essentially been given the authority to seize vehicles, to seize property, to seize the license plates, to seize licenses and suspend them for 14 days without a trial. You don't even need a hear. The person doesn't even have the right to a hearing, right? Section 9, subsection 3, the person is not entitled to a hearing before an order may be made under subsection 1 or 2. So they can do what they want, and there's no checks and balances in place. And then the fines are quite obscene. That if the offense is under subsection 1 or 2, that it could be up to a $100,000 fine and imprisonment for a term of not more than 1 year or both.
And taken right out of the Reopen Ontario Act.
Right, and then B, so this is subsection 11 here, in the case of an offense under subsection 3, to a fine of not more than $500,000 and for a term of not more than 1 year or both. And then the police officer, without warrant, can arrest whoever the officer believes on reasonable grounds is totally subjective. They are guilty of the offense. They haven't complied with the subsection. They're contravening the clause. So basically, if you do anything that disrupts the economic activity or well-being or health and safety of people, then we will take your stuff, we'll arrest you, we'll fine you, we'll put you in jail. And this is why I said the original title of the bill was that much longer title, because essentially the government of Ontario is saying everything we've been doing for the last 2 years, right? We've massively disrupted the economic activity of the province. We've shut down businesses. We've closed restaurants. We've ruined people's lives and livelihoods. All their savings gone. We've just destroyed them. We've closed churches. We've negatively affected the health and safety of people by locking down nursing homes or by putting sick people in nursing homes. We jacked up the deaths by forcing people to muzzle themselves. We have adverse effects and reactions to it. We've severely negatively affected the health and well-being of people and disrupted the economic activity of the province. They did that for 2 years, and they did it, no liability, no punishment, and now they're saying, but you can't do it. We did it. But now you can't do it. And if you do, we'll take your money and we'll throw you in prison and we'll take your vehicle. And so it is that dad who says, I was a crazy rebel and I never repented of it. But now that I have kids, because of the hassle it brings on me, now they have to be perfect little kids and they can't do the stuff that I was free to do just a few years ago. That's what this bill is really about.
And Mike, before you jump in, because I know you have a lot to say on this bill, I just want to point out how dangerous subsection 2B is. Because, well, we can understand keeping Ontario open for business would include, avoiding the disruption of ordinary economic activity. Interfering with the safety, health, or well-being of members of the public is so broad and so vague, it could mean anything, right? As a pro-life activist, I've been on many street corners across this entire country dialoguing with people about the murderous activity of abortion using AVP, abortion victim photography, showing people the gruesome reality of what abortion does to an innocent preborn child. That could be interpreted, right? How could it not be interpreted as interfering with the safety, you know, the mental safety or the mental well-being of individuals in the society? How, like, I'm not saying that's what Ford's government will do, but this law passed sets a precedent that in future, under future regimes, under future governments, how could they not extend this to ordinary dissenting voices in protests, even like pro-life activists on the street showing the reality of what abortion does?
Well, that's really the concerning point of this. You know, you talk about, you know, the ordinary use of. So does this mean that no protest can shut down a roadway again? Does this mean that if you call, like, so many of the protests that have happened in the last 2 years has been an arrangement with the local police to say, we are wanting to do a protest here and we want to coordinate with you so that the health, the safety and health and well-being of individuals is not undermined. Now you have these measures. You know, a police officer can just deny that ordinary protest function because it's shutting down the, you know, access or the ordinary use of a protected transportation infrastructure. Now, I'm not sure if they qualify later on what a protected transportation infrastructure is, but I would assume that that would be as wide and broad as anything else. Nope, you can't do that anymore because that affects a road. I certainly don't like all of the powers that are given pre any type of trial situation, or it seems like
even a warrant. They don't even need a warrant.
Guilty, yeah. Presumed guilty on the spot. Yeah, this is, you know, obviously this is aimed, supposed to feel like it is aimed directly at like truckers, for the idea of even Andrew used the reference of like the Ambassador Bridge. But as you read this, it sure seems like if you want to just have a normal protest that involves any type of vehicle at all, and it's shutting down, it doesn't say that it has to involve a vehicle, by the way. It just infers that if a vehicle is involved. So you could be, for a walking protest, the same type of thing. And again, just something that is really concerning is, again, the removal of a license, the removal of a vehicle, and fines up to $100,000 and imprisonment up to a year. So again, you're leading a peaceful protest, but a vehicle is in use. Maybe you've got a vehicle there with a generator on the back in order to power the speakers. You've got a vehicle leading a parade, and you're telling me that at the police discretion, somebody leading a parade, someone leading a march in a vehicle, could, or individuals who are on the street shutting down a road, would receive up to $100,000 and up to a year in jail, or up to $500,000 and a year in jail. This changes the tone of, like, is a stay-at-home mom going to take her kids and go on a walking protest down the middle of the street? I think most Canadians will just go, ah, whatever. That's just going to be used for the extreme situations. But what we've known of the last year is that this was used for when you kept your church open, even though everybody could go down the street and shop at Walmart. I've said that 100,000 times. If those are the types of fines that we can face, why don't we remind people of that 100,000 times? Like, the reality of it is this discretion is so heavily weighted towards law enforcement, and it includes such a maximum amount of pain. You're going to see the police use it when they want to make an example of someone, and we should not be under the assumption that this is going to be in rare and exceptional cases.
Well, and I want to get a little personal for a sec here, because I think we talk about these bills and we talk about this legislation.
Matthew, do you want Andrew to get personal? It could be a dangerous segment if Andrew gets too personal.
Not too. I didn't say too personal.
Why else do we have him on the program?
I didn't say too personal. Just enough personal to not get all the way canceled. Okay. When we talk about this stuff, if it's out there in the clouds and some people debating something in the House of Commons or in the Senate, that's one thing. But talking about how this really touches down, we all know people who in the last 2 years, because of the insane mandates and restrictions and the heavy-handedness of our government, have suffered tremendously. Right? So I know people in my context, in my city, people close to me who were kicked out of university because they wouldn't take the shot, even though they had the proof of natural immunity and the public health document showing they had the antibodies. I have close friends who basically their restaurant was shut down and their business and their livelihood was wrecked for no good reason. It's not like you could have pointed to these cases or these deaths and look at this Ebola that's just sweeping through. It was just unjustified. And so we know that that happened. And the people who did that, our elected officials, our unelected health bureaucrats who made those decisions, who crushed lives, who very much disrupted the economic activity of the province, who very much did things that negatively affected the health and well-being of people. I mean, the emotional, the psychological, and the physical consequences of isolation, of not seeing people, of not seeing faces, and they did that with no consequence. The charter, that useless piece of paper, did not hold them accountable, and so they got to do whatever they did, and they destroyed people's lives. And what's infuriating about this particular piece of legislation is the rank hypocrisy that our elected officials are saying, we can do it, but you can't. The only people who were allowed to destroy lives and get away with it, the only people who can ruin businesses and get in the way of the everyday life of the people, only us. You can't. And if you do it, we'll take your money and put you in prison. And it's madness that they think that this is okay.
I do want to just go ahead and you know, make sure that that analogy is understood properly. The protests that we have seen over the last 2 years and throughout our lifetimes do not ruin people economically.
Right.
Running a march, like, you know, down the Gardiner for an afternoon is an inconvenience to Torontonians, but it has been a protected right in this country. And it is now punishable up to $100,000 in fines. So it's all of this language. So Andrew, you're right in the sense that they have actually done all of these things where we've been putting up our hands saying, well, wait a minute, what about this? And wait a minute, what about that? And they're unanswerable. But now they're coming down on their opponents who have not even been doing that. Who have not been doing that? We've the civil disobedience that has occurred within our provinces across this nation have virtually affected no one's life. And you know, you could make an argument for the trucker convoy, but even at that, the trucker convoy was tucked in really close, right up front of Parliament. If you were two blocks away, you wouldn't even know it was there. Once the honking had stopped, once there was that injunction on that, really, if you were two blocks away, you wouldn't even know what was happening. We are not talking about people who are executing major attacks on safety, health, or the infrastructure of our country. You're talking about very legal protests. Okay, Matt, I'm going to give you the last word on that, then we're going to go on to our next story and say goodbye to the Italian stallion.
Yeah, well, I'm not from Ontario, but I, as a Manitoban, can see clearly the dangerous precedent that this sets and why all Ontarians should be pushing back against this with all their might, even if they agree that with the government that the protests on the Ambassador Bridge went too far. Why? Because the precedent that this sets, it amends the Civil Liberties Act in Ontario to allow for the seizure of property, like you guys talked about, including vehicle, license plate, driver's license, and even potentially one's home, okay? So it's broad, and it leaves the discretion up to an individual member of law enforcement. And as you guys said, there is not proper measures for the citizen to redress grievances because of due process. That's removed, and now the burden of proof is on the citizen, right? It totally inverts that relationship where unless a bad faith can be proved on the government's end, on the law enforcement's end, the citizen is presumed guilty rather than innocent, and that just flips everything on its head. And that's the par for the course of human society throughout the vast majority of human history, and we take that for granted. You know, especially in the British common law tradition, the rule of higher law was primarily put in place for the protection of the citizens, not the government, right? The government was seen as divine and authoritative and could put arbitrary dictates in place and imprison people on a whim. And the higher law was put in place to protect citizenry from authoritarian coercive powers that the state was imposing on them. But Bill C-100 is a regressive step that goes backwards and puts the onus on the citizen and protects the coercive state in the use of these emergency powers, or what were once emergency powers, and now they're going to be considered norm and par for the course. That's the danger. That's why we can't sleep on this bill, because it sets a precedent that is very, very dangerous for all Canadian civil liberties, especially Ontario.
Yeah, like, again, you look at it and you think of, you know, a police officer's ability to have a car towed, or a police officer's ability to arrest somebody and question them. You know, this is like seizure of your property at the discretion of a police officer. So you've got a really angry cop who has had a crappy week, you know, went through a divorce and is looking at taking it out on somebody. This gives them extraordinary powers. Okay, you know what? I just want everybody to remember, this is also a Doug Ford government. This is an Ontario Doug Ford. This is our conservative who is supposed to be helping us get out of I don't like these mandates. I don't like this over government. Nope. This is just Dougie going along with whomever Dougie's telling him what to do.
When you say that, and if you're going to do the impression, you have to have dead eyes where you're a robot. We're like, oh, no, I don't agree with it. Like, that's, if you do the impression, you got to do it that way, okay? Just be accurate.
I'm going to work on that. Whatever the doctors say, whatever the police want to say. I don't think
that's spot on.
Yeah. Like,
finally, too, Mike, none of these powers were needed to actually disperse those protests, right? So that's something that we also need to keep in mind as well, is the government doesn't need to do this. They're doing this because they want to have this extreme power.
They want to scare people from speaking up against them in any tangible way that would be visible, right? You got to remember that the reason why the trucker convoy was successful, and convoys in the past have been successful, because they get people's attention. You know, you're not, they're this process by which it's not easily dismantled, and it takes some time. Now, with that being said, Matthew, I totally agree. The truckers had already told the OPP that they were willing to roll out of Ottawa before everything happened, before the emergency measures were put in place. So this is another government decision. Again, it's just so favorable to the government. You know, I 10 years ago, if you had asked me, like, do you like it when protests shut down public spaces? I'd say, it's an inconvenience. I don't love it. But now we see how critically important it is for citizens to use public protest as a way to get other people talking and to get visibility. And again, as long as it's remaining peaceful, as long as it is remaining lawful, now, of course, they've just changed the law to be so broad that you'll never know. Is today the day that I run a little local march? And Matthew, you talked about it, like a pro-life march downtown, down the streets of Alliston or Barrie or wherever you guys live somewhere. I don't even know if Drew lives in a city. I just think he lives out in the middle of nowhere, you know. Sorry, I couldn't go further with that analogy. Like, the You don't know what you're going to get. And so someone's going to be like, this isn't a problem. We've held like 5 protests. And so the 6th person goes out and holds a protest, and it happens to have a vehicle at the front of it, and someone's getting their license plates taken away because it's an anger protest. And it will be interesting to see if any of this is applied to the LGBTQI alphabet type of protest as well, or if this is just going to be anything that is deemed upholding freedom. Okay, Andrew, thank you for coming on. It was great to have you. We're going to say goodbye to you now, and Matthew's going to lead us through some of the commentary on the new budget.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us.
Take care, guys.
Godspeed, brother. Yeah, Mike, and in our final story, we are going to take a look at the 2022 budget that was just unveiled by our federal government on April 7th, 2022. And it was backed by this new liberal NDP coalition, this supply and confidence coalition that they have. And it is a huge leap forward into the supposed green fourth industrial revolution, a la Klaus Schwab and his buddies at the World Economic Forum. And what we see is it is the budget is an enviro-communo-fascistic boondoggle that will greatly increase government intervention into the Canadian economy.
So this reported to us by True North in on April 7th, Freeland announced $56 billion in new spending in 2022. Some of the new spending includes $8 billion in defense, $10 billion towards an affordable housing plan, and further taxes on financial institutions. The Liberals have also raised the surtax on earning of over $1 billion by 1.5%, bringing it to 16.5%. The budget adds $56 billion in new spending, and that is $50 billion in debt in this fiscal year alone. Matt, I just can't believe how much more spending they're doing on top of all of the proposed needed COVID-19 spending. But this adds our astronomical public debt up to trillions. So that's $1,048,750,000,000. And folks, keep in mind that the idea of a trillion is 1 million. Times a million.
Like, it's hard to fathom.
This is significant spending, Matt. Matt, you've been doing some research on how this will be affecting our future budgets. Why don't you unpack that for us now?
Yeah, well, so also the True North does some great reporting, and they reported on the Parliamentary Budgetary Office's report in light of this newly proposed budget that these measures, this spending that is proposed by our federal government, the trajectory will not balance our budget until the year 2070. Which is ridiculous. And that's why I think we should hesitate to even call it a budget, because this is just a plan to spend. I do budgets with my wife, which we budget so we can save more than we spend. You know, the amount we're our income is greater than our expenditures. And that's why you budget. In Canada nowadays, we just put forward plans to spend. And that's what's really gross about this is, according to True North, the fiscal sustainability report says that under the current status quo, the budget will not be balanced till 2070. In its estimate, the PBO says the government is projected to tack on an additional $2.7 trillion in debt before balancing the budget in 2070. And in that time span, the Canadian government will have to pay $3.8 trillion just in interest alone by the time we reach 2070. So that is an astronomical projection. And this all takes place within the context of skyrocketing inflation, which we just saw. Wall Street Journal came out with a story that I was looking at. The Canadian inflation accelerated to a whopping 6.7% in March. And this is against the backdrop of the fact that the economic anchor that our liberals want to use, which is the debt to GDP ratio, is a record high 117.8% of our debt to GDP. So that means our debt is 117.8% higher than our economic output as a country. Do you think, for a government that talks about sustainability all the time, do you think that's sustainable? Do you think that's proper? And we have to understand that within this budget, it doesn't even take into consideration PharmaCare, which is a federal PharmaCare plan that is a part of this NDP liberal coalition that was promised to the NDPs to be put in place by next year. So they're going to tack on this entire new broad PharmaCare spending on top of this budget next year, according to this supply and confidence agreement. So all of this is astronomical, yet our insane clown show of a mainstream media here in Canada. I watched over an hour of CBC News on the budget alone, and they had the gall to call this bill parsimonious, which literally means excessively sparing or frugal. And that's because relative to what they could have spent, it was really not that bad. That is not in any ways economically responsible, and it's totally idiotic. And that's unfortunately what we see in this bill, in this budget, is just more gigantic government extending their reach into every aspect of human life and in all sectors of our economy.
Yeah, and you know, the reality of this, you know, it's a very simple principle, Matthew, and we're going to see it laid out. And I think this, we need to dig down a little bit deeper into this, maybe in the coming months, just to really help people understand this. But you know, Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." So when you ask, when we say we're going to spend $56 billion in debt, like we're going to add $50 billion of debt, and when we say we have over $1 trillion of debt as a nation, the question is well, to whom do we owe that debt, right? So we owe that debt as citizens. You know, our nation has taken on debt as citizens. Then our nation owes banks and other financial institutions that debt. Our citizenry owes other foreign individuals. You know, we have foreigners who own our debt. We have a number of different individuals who own our debt, and that principle of ownership is going to be laid out. When we overspend, not only do we, as you just mentioned very succinctly, that not only do we become unsustainable, Matt, but we actually have a servitude there. We owe this money to somebody. And when this money, I don't fully understand how they can project out, you know, to up to 2070. I understand they're saying at these current spending rates. Okay, that makes sense. So let's say we cut all of that back and we only had to deal with the debt that we had. We're still talking about our children and our grandchildren serving somebody else. When we can no longer service our own debt, and or the service fees on our debt are so great, we're actually trading off the loyalty aspect. Our citizens are no longer able to focus on our national good. We really fall right in line with a globalist agenda because of that very simple rule of the world, and that is the borrower is servant to the lender. That's why you want to be very careful with the debt that you take.
Yeah, and we're putting an even more unsustainable burden, a yoke upon the next generations of our society, because if debt to GDP ratio is as high as it is right now, and it's going to get worse under this budget, then we're talking about you have to work 107, like twice as hard as a nation to get to where your books are solvent. This is crazy. And what we see in the budget is instead of cutting back spending after blowing out the government coffers over COVID-19, the government's introducing new dental care, public health care insurance plans, according to that coalition bargain. All these measures are not the measures of a free market, but a command and control economic order where the government picks winners and losers based on their preferred policy outcomes, and it's really rooted in their dogmatic religious beliefs. And that's what we're seeing is our government is trying to command and control our entire economic structure in Canada. And as Ludwig von Mises and a bunch of wonderful, like Hayek, a lot of these Austrian economists pointed out, is socialism, which this is unfeasible because you cannot, the government and central actors and agents within the government do not have the aggregate knowledge that a free market has. So it's totally unfeasible. It's totally unsustainable. And all this government intervention into the market leads to malinvestment. So it focuses money where the market doesn't want it to go in areas that are unsustainable. And it creates these boom bust cycles that leave everybody poor. A malinvestment means we're not investing our time, energy, capital, and resources into the areas where they should be. And that is going to leave a lot of people less well off. So all of these nonsense budgets, which aren't truly budgets, are going to leave Canadians poorer. And the funny part is, Mike, throughout the entire budget, how they sell it to the public is they've been putting in these little havens of tax relief and these little tax-free savings accounts. But it's never occurred to the government that the reason they have to do this is because they're taking so much from Canadians in the first place that in order to be economically viable, they need to carve out these little areas where Canadians can at least have some relief from the government stamping on their face all the time when it comes to economic activity. It's absurd, but apparently it's parsimonious according to our mainstream media.
Well, you made a really great point there, Matt. I thought it was incredibly helpful. Yeah, when you have these socialist budgets, so there's two issues going on at the same time, right? There's overspending and then there's directed spending. And this is doing, it's like a perfect storm. You're kind of waiting for our beloved Ocean's 11 actor that everybody, George Clooney. You're waiting for George Clooney to go out and go fishing off of Gloucester in the perfect storm, and you're seeing these two hurricanes meet together, a northeastern and something coming out of the south, and we're overspending, so we're borrowing and we're robbing from the next generation. We're also giving ourselves to a globalist agenda by overspending. But then that point that you just made, such an itemized socialist idea directs the spending where it's not helpful for individuals to thrive and to bear responsibility and to run a business. So you're seeing the worst of two worlds right now coming together in this type of spending. So, you know what, everybody, we've been going pretty deep. We've been going for a little while. We've hit the hour mark. So, we are glad that you're listening. Would you please stick with us? There's a lot of important information we're going to go through. I think, Matt, we need to re-hit the budget a few more times because I want to understand some of these principles a bit deeper, but, I'll give the last word to you and then I'll tell everybody to have a nice day.
Yeah, I mean, we only touch the surface of the budget and what's in it. Obviously, it's a 340-page document, so it's hard to go too in-depth on a show like this. But what we see is it's just more of the same nonsense. And it doesn't even factor into our government's mind that government intervention in the economy is the problem. So instead of getting out and getting their hands off the economy, they are proposing budgets that would further entrench them in the economy, where they're commanding and controlling, where they are the arbiters of whether we're going to have economic success or not. I hate when governments take credit for economic activity, and I hate when people blame them for it. You know, nowadays, with how involved they are in the economy, there's a lot of blame to put on their shoulders. But realistically, in a free market system, the government would have little at all to do with anything economic, because free individuals, volitional citizens, would be trading with one another in a lawful manner. And given the coincidence of double wants, value and wealth would be created in our society without the machinations of government, you know, getting involved in it, because they always, when they get involved, they always ruin our system. And we can see it in our inflation numbers, in our housing bubble, in our debt to GDP. You know, decades of government intervention in the economy has not made Canadians richer. It's made Canadians poorer, and it's enslaved Canadians to this big centralized administrative state. And that's something we have to throw the shackles off if we want to truly be liberated, free Canadians in our society.
One point I want to just make as I say goodbye to everybody is that you'll notice that there's a tremendous amount of spending in this budget over and above what we can afford for foreign spending. So here you have indebting Canadians to foreign lenders while spending the money on foreign policies. I just think that there's just so much here that they could easily cut back, not spend, and really help Canadians. So folks, thanks for listening. This is Liberty Dispatch, and Godspeed.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.